Hi, this is Jay Washburn.
And I'm Joe Bondosky.
And this is Start Writing.
And today we are going to continue our discussion on dialogue. As we mentioned in part one, a lot of this are maybe bits and pieces we've covered in various topics we've already talked about, but we did want to concentrate everything down into one piece here, and we'll definitely cover some new stuff as well. Just so that if you wanted to brush up on your dialogue, you could just go to this specific suite of episodes and get everything right here rather than hunting through like 40 different episodes for bits and pieces. So tags and action beats. These are used to identify speakers and actors in various paragraphs. So the tag is really simple. This is just a single word followed by a verb by the speaker. So an example would, "Give me that," Amy shouted. So anytime you get this name of character and then said, yelled, screamed, whispered, all of that, those are just tags because it's just that single descriptive word with the character's name there. And then, of course, the action beat is when we get a character action. So they're doing something as well. And we did talk about earlier that action beats are greater than tags. And that does not mean that the action beat is better, right? That doesn't mean that, you know, Amy pounded her fist on the table, "Give me that," is better than Amy shouted. What it means is if you've got both, kill the tag and keep the action beat. And even then, you can be judicial. Which of these is the better descriptor of what's going, the more important of the two? But you don't want both because that means you're double identifying your speaker and then you're wasting words, which, as we've talked about before, is slowing down your pacing.
Yeah, man. So, Joe, when I met you years ago, you taught me about action beats. I feel like it's really helped my writing to just like tighten up a lot. But
yeah.
And that's combined with the one actor per paragraph rule. And if you do that consistently throughout your book, then you just have the action beat in there and then the dialogue, but you never say who said it, and people just know because you've followed the rules so consistently. And
it's just
tight writing rules.
Yeah, the three rules together, you know, the not doubling up on your tags and your action beats, using action beats, and the one act paragraph, those three together make for really just tight paragraphs that are very clear to follow and just save you a lot of words. You know, there's a lot less to explain about who's doing what all the time. So said is dead. We mentioned that we would cover this in part one, and we're finally getting around to it. So the most common tag of all used in writing is said. If you follow the writing community on Twitter, you'll encounter this phrase, said is dead. And people arguing that we don't need to be writing said all the time to tag our dialogues and that it needs to die, that it's just a waste. And so this came about as a result of audiobooks. When most readers encounter just rows and rows upon Alan said, Ben said, Carrie said, you know, with their dialogue in between, those tags just kind of disappeared, that readers would just see the name and kind of skim over the said, and they weren't, you know, really reading it or even thinking it out loud in their heads. It didn't cause problems, but with the boom of smartphones came the boom of audiobooks because it was just so convenient to have an audiobook to carry around with you. Well, an audiobook narrator doesn't have that choice to skim over said all of the time. They've got to read the book as it is written. And so what would happen is you would get, you know, Alan said, Ben said, Carrie said, and it got really annoying and it really stood out to listeners in those audiobooks. So that kind of is the root of where this debate came up. It's like, if actually reading these out loud annoys readers and readers are just skipping it, then why are we doing it at all? Why don't we just kill it and stop doing this? And so my own opinion on said is dead is that I don't think said is dead, because anytime you get more than three people in a room, you have to have a tag anytime. You've got to have a tag or an action beat anytime there's any kind of dialogue. You know, if you're following one actor per paragraph, then I know the next line of dialogue is not the person who just said the previous one, because, you know, we've got one actor per paragraph. But I don't know which of the three people the next one comes to unless it has a tag attached to it.
Yeah.
And I know Jay and I have talked about this before, that an audio narrator, a good narrator, through the use of voice inflection and accents, will tag your dialogues for you by having a different voice for each character. And so sometimes we've even mentioned, sometimes you want to make the the manuscript for an audiobook slightly different than it is for the textbook, because you can pull out some of those saids in that audiobook and your narrator is going to stay on top of that for you and make it work. Whereas in the written book, I think you still need those, because as we talked about with Cormac McCarthy, it can be really confusing reading his books.
Yeah.
You know, but if you, you know, and that's the reason I listen to his books in audio, is because I get too confused, you know, whereas if his audio narrator is confused, he fires off an email and Cormac says, oh, it's this character saying this. And so you get the right voice attached to it. So I think when it comes to the written manuscript, I don't think said is dead. We still need it to help identify those readers.
I really agree with you, but I also think it's a problem if it sounds bad in the audiobook. But it seems like a huge hassle to go edit that manually. Do you think it's possible to just tell an audiobook narrator, listen, if you're doing the voice, you can leave off he said? Like, could you do that, or is that too much of an ask?
I mean, you could ask that. I don't know how the audiobook narrator would respond. But I do agree with you. Like, I feel like if your manuscript is really well written, you don't need to change it. So in myself, I feel like if I'm using said more than once on a page, I usually want to swap it for a different tag. So we talked about, so tags can even serve as two purposes here. One is to identify the speaker, but the other can be to remind the readers how the scene is playing out. So let me give you an example here. I think I've got it down here. Amy leaned in and whispered, "That's the handoff, and he's your target." So then we have a new paragraph. "When do you want me to call for backup?" New paragraph. "If he goes back to the hotel," Amy whispered. So the second, so this tag here, Amy whispered. So we talked about before, when you have dialogue and you've got a description. So the description here is whisper, right? Then you need it to come before the dialogue so that the reader knows that's how the dialogue needs to be read here. Now in the third line, "If he goes back to hotel," Amy whispered. The reason I've chosen not to put this before the dialogue is because I'm not trying to tell you how the scene is playing out. I'm just reminding you that they are continuing to whisper. And so it can come as a tag on the back end there.
Although, man, just like you said, you wouldn't want to use said on the same page. I would be worried about saying whispered too often.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to use it too often. And here they're really close together, but I did that just for the example purpose, right?
Yeah.
So then we get another paragraph, and it's, "Get down," he shouted, "he's got a gun." Now, this is a bad example, because if the "get down," he would be shouting that, right? "Get down, he's got a gun," all of a sudden, right? It's a dramatic shift to the scene. And so the description here needs to come before, because
he shouted, "Get down." And then are you saying "he's got a gun" is also shouted?
Yeah, it's also shouted, all of it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and so, like I said, this is a bad example, because particularly when we shifted, the tone of this whole back and forth between these two characters is whispered, right? We established that with the first whisper. We reminded you with another tag. Well, when we have that dramatic shift, if that tag he shouted doesn't come first, then I read that line, "get down," as they're still whispering. And suddenly it doesn't make sense in the scene.
Yeah.
Whenever you toss in the tag at the end of a sentence, it serves only one of two purposes. One, identify the speaker. Two, remind us of how the scene is playing out. At no point should it shift that emotional continuity of the dialogue, because it's got to come before any dialogue that's shifted. Otherwise, that's not how the reader's going to read your scene. Again, some subtle things dealing with just style and grammar. And some of these are so subtle that readers may not even pick up on it. So, like, the one I like to use is "he laughed." So if I use the phrase "he laughed," period, no, that means he laughs, ha ha, and then he says no. Whereas if I use a comma, "he laughed, comma," but that's not what happened, then "he laughs through the line," but that's not what happened, right? And again, sometimes when you're doing these really subtle things like that, a reader might not pick up on them, but a reader who really knows their grammar will identify that and be able to pick up on some of these subtleties. So then the question you have to ask yourself, is it worth it? And so I think a lot of times if readers aren't going to pick up on that, that subtle difference, I would go ahead and jump into an explanation. So I would say, he laughed, then all emotion left his face and voice. No. Mm. Right. And so there it's that is exactly how that period should read out. But it's so subtle that I think a lot of people would miss it. Whereas the second one really, I mean, my third example here really draws attention, right? When he says that line, no, he is not laughing. And that's a really stark shift in.
Well, just to summarize, because I think it might be hard for some people to follow along with the text, but basically he laughed, period. It's saying the laugh has ended because of the period. And if you don't think it's clear enough with that period, then you want that extra phrase, then all emotion left his face and voice as he said no. So yeah. Like you're like cueing him in.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, especially if that I'm imagining this is a scene where it matters that he says no without laughing.
Like, yes.
This isn't a gleeful laugh. This is like a laugh of shock, and it's really a very serious thing, and that's why it transitioned back to serious.
I think that's a really good point. If it matters how that line no is said, if it's going to make a big difference, period or comma, to how that emotional scene plays out, then you definitely want to take that time to explain. But it's not going to make a big difference if it's not really key to the scene, then I wouldn't waste my words on that. I would put the period and write no and move on.
Yeah, that's good.
We are talking a lot about text. So if you want to see this whole episode written out with all the examples, you can see that on our website, joseph-bendosky.com, and then /start-writing, and then you can find the episode listed there as dialogue part two. So you can really look at some of these examples if you're getting lost in them. So subtext is definitely something we've talked about in episodes before, but action beats are a great place for the subtext. Things like body language, symbolic actions can play out in the middle of dialogue because you've got these action beats that are identifying our speakers, but also you can really play out some great subtleties in meaning and whatnot within them. So we did already talk about how, I always say action beats are greater than tags. But again, the better way to look at it is you only want one of the two and you pick whichever one is best suited to your purpose in that moment.
Yeah. And you know what? I usually find that I need an action beat or two, or I should say I need action beats here and there. So when I start a conversation, I try to get those action beats in. And then after a while, like, especially if it's a long conversation, there's not action beats to do. Like, you just want them to talk. And so that then after I've already used my action beats, then I kind of revert to he said, she said, until there's like a significant action that I can put in there. Because sometimes if you put in too many action beats, it's just like, it just feels too on the nose.
Yeah. So great. All right. So we're going to take a quick commercial break here. And then we get back, we'll talk about action beats and rhythm and subtext and some examples there. We'll talk about the use of passive voice and using action beats to create character identifiers. Have you ever seen the Oatmeal cartoon where he is debating on whether or not to download the torrent for the Game of Thrones? So he wants to watch the Game of Thrones and he's considering getting the torrent, and then his conscience kicks in. He's like, no, these are, you know, writers and directors and actors and a lot of people putting in a lot of hard work to create this content for me, and they should be paid for their work. So he decides, you know, he whips out his credit card, he's decided, I'm gonna buy this so that these people who've worked hard can get paid for their work. So then he goes to Amazon and he tries to buy it there and he can't get it there. And then he goes to Hulu and Netflix and anywhere and everywhere. He goes to every site he can think of, and he cannot find the Game of Thrones anywhere. So then he goes directly to HBO and he's like, I'll just subscribe to HBO. And because of the country he lives in, he can't even get HBO. And so he literally cannot download the Game of Thrones or buy it anywhere possible. So he decides to download the torrent because he just can't get it. But you don't have that problem with Start Writing. You can go to our Patreon at patreon.com/startwritingpodcast, and you can just put a dollar in our jar, you know, support the show and help us keep creating it and offset some of the costs that it takes us to make the show available for you to download on your phone or wherever you listen. And as always, we are grateful for those who are supporting us. So we are continuing here with action beats. We talked about the comparison between action beats and tags. And so now we're going to talk about how you can use an action beat to create a rhythm. So the placement of an action beat or a tag can be used to kind of control the rhythm of speech. And in doing so, it can create additional emphasis through positioning, not explanation. So again, all about saving our word count here. Here are examples. Run through the tunnel and don't look back, Derek yelled. Run through the tunnel, Derek yelled, and don't look back. And then run, Derek yelled, through the tunnel and don't look back. So you can kind of hear with each sentence how that emphasis is shifted based on where I'm putting that tag in the line. So in the first one, the emphasis is almost on Derek yelled, because the whole sentence is it's all in one block. So there's not a real emphasis on anything that he actually says. The emphasis seems to feel more on how he said it, which comes at the end. So run through the tunnel, Derek yelled, and don't look back. So it feels almost like the emphasis is on the tail end there, because we get that yelled, and so we really carry the emphasis of that tag into the second part of the sentence. And then, of course, run, Derek yelled. That feels where the emphasis is in that third one. And so you could do a lot of explaining to really make sure the audience gets this by, you know, explaining where the real emphasis of the tone came to really identify that. Or you can just shift around where you put that action beat or where you put that tag and create your emphasis that way.
Okay, so based on what you said before, you don't think we need Derek yelled at the beginning?
I'm assuming that we've got a yelling going back and forth here. Okay. But you do bring up a good point. And so the only reason here would be like, if we haven't already identified that he's yelling, then what we're doing is, you know, he's it's kind of an escalating into a yell, whatever he's saying, if we put it in the middle.
So I write often just on intuition, like how it feels. And I actually like the first one where Derek yelled is at the end.
Because that's how it feels it should be.
Yeah, I don't know. Just for what it's worth, there you go.
So, yeah. Well, and I think in your first, this right here is not something you want to be thinking about in a first draft. It's just too much consideration to be putting into that first draft. This is a final polish kind of thing. You're getting ready the final draft and you can look at a sentence and maybe you've explained something, you know, somewhere along the line here, be like, he put heavy emphasis on the last word, something like that, and be like, okay, if I take out my explanation of the emphasis, can I simply move the position of a tag and still create that exact same emphasis? So, you know, it's about just a really final polish, like this should be the last draft you're doing when you're looking at this kind of detail on a dialogue. And then as far as creating a rhythm, you can create this by blending in multiple breaks into a dialogue. So in the first example, I will give the dialogue followed by the dialogue description and an action beat. In the second example, I'll move the description sentence to break up the dialogue and add emphasis, as we saw in the above example. And then in the third, I'll break the descriptive part into two pieces and use that to create kind of a rhythmic dialogue. So here are our examples here. From that first moment, I saw you in the hallway with that ribbon in your hair, Carter whispered in the silence and took a step towards her. So from that first moment, I saw you in the hallway, Carter whispered in the silence and took a step towards her with that ribbon in your hair. And then finally in the rhythmic piece here, from that first moment, Carter whispered in the silence, I saw you in the hallway. He took a step towards her with that ribbon in your hair. So the first two are designed to shift the emphasis. The final one is not really to create a specific emphasis, but to kind of create this rhythm. We get a piece of dialogue that's not too long. We get a piece of action beat that's not too long. We get a piece of dialogue, not too long, action beat, dialogue. And so it's just kind of that smooth rhythm. And I like the way the last one flows.
Oh, yeah.
It's
Great.
Yeah, but it's not creating a specific emphasis. And so when you're looking at creating a rhythm to the dialogue in that way, you also want to look at what's more important, that smooth rhythm or creating an emphasis by shifting things around.
I feel like that rhythm creates a lot of mood with it.
Yeah,
it's cool.
So yeah, it definitely does. So, and one thing you'll always want to look at is, so in this piece, the first thing said and the last thing said are always going to have greater emphasis just because of the nature of human memory, right? The first things and last things we always remember more. And so there is always going to be just a little more emphasis on that, you know, from the first moment and with that ribbon in your hair are always going to have that little more emphasis just because they come first and last. But again, the rhythmic piece really breaks things up into more about being a smooth rhythm rather than an emphatic focus.
Yeah.
So subtext, the great example we have used anytime we've brought up subtext is from that old, the movie, The Ten Commandments. So there's that great scene with Ramses and Moses. And Moses comes into talk to Ramses, and as always, to let my people go, right? His constant pleading. And Ramses has an old-fashioned scale, right? So just two little plates that he sets the weight on, and, you know, whichever is heavier shifts to the other side. And as they're talking, Ramses takes a stack of coins and he puts it on one side. And as the conversation continues, every slight, every struggle, every offense done by Moses or the Israelites, Ramses places a coin on the scale until eventually the slights and the problems tips the scale to the other side. And so at no point during that conversation does Ramses say to Moses, "You have become more trouble than you are worth." But that is exactly what he says by tipping the scales with the weights. And so that's, it's this so cool. Really powerful piece of subtext that is put in the action beats. Because if you were to write this out in a scene, those would be the action beats, not dialogue at all. And so that's exactly what you can do there. And then if we go back to this example from the rhythm, we have the fact that he's whispering and he's taking a step towards her. And each of those pieces kind of conveys the subtext, you know, of a romantic feeling between these two. Mm-hmm. Now, we could probably change that romantic feeling to a stalker feeling just by swapping out our verbs. So if we change whispered to hissed, and if we change stepped to stalked, right? Suddenly, from that first moment, Carter hissed in the silence, "I saw you in the hallway." He stalked towards her with that ribbon in your hair. Now, right, we've just switched out our verbs, but in so doing, we've completely changed the subtext of the sentence.
That's crazy. That's a good example.
Yeah. So just the way that you can control the subtext and really build in either symbolic meaning, like we did with Moses and Ramses, or just shift the meaning of something by controlling that subtext. So that's, yeah, just some really cool things you can do with your action beats in the midst of dialogue. Passive voice. So have we done a full episode on passive voice? I don't remember.
I feel like we did, but I am not entirely sure.
All right. So we did a grammar piece, just a short grammar piece on passive voice. And I do want to bring it up here just because there's a blanket rule in writing that says don't use passive voice. And I disagree with all blanket rules. And I think almost any writer who's been, you know, really working at their craft for a long time will disagree, because there's always a time when you should not follow that rule. What we're talking about here is, of course, passive voice in dialogue. And so as we cover this, I think probably one of the places you'll hear passive voice used the most is either by journalists or politicians or just people following the corporate line. Like, I think the one people have heard the most is "mistakes were made," right? That's a common press conference statement. Because they're avoiding identifying anyone who made those mistakes. It's done on purpose, right? That passive voice is not an accident. It's not bad writing. It's very intentional to hide the identity of whoever made these mistakes. So to move that into active voice, you'd have to say, "People have made mistakes." And of course, then that raises the question, who are these people? Whereas mistakes were made leaves that off. You don't get to question that by the nature of the sentence itself. So, you know, a lot of writers who write in, mystery, of course, there's definitely a reason to want to use passive voice in that genre, because you can continue to hide information and identities. But, you know, even in the non-specific mystery genres, there's still an element of mystery a lot of writers use when we're keeping secrets for various reasons. And of course, you can use this here. Now, it's going to be a little bit less common in dialogue than it is just in a narrative when we're trying to conceal information intentionally. Or sometimes it just allows us to shift the emphasis of something. So the good use of passive voice will allow us to move the most potent piece of information to the end of a sentence. And if you move it to the end of the sentence, you can also move it to the end of a paragraph. And that might even be the very last word of a chapter. So let me point out this use of passive voice that could be the very last sentence and the very last word of a chapter that is the big reveal. So Detective Carlson lifted his hand and pointed. The shot was fired by Amy. And so if that character is the big shock, the big reveal, that is the person who fired the shot, then we can move that to the very, very, very end of the chapter for that big shock effect on the reader by using a passive voice.
Man, I love that. I'm really big on those chapter endings because I just feel like the last line of your chapter stands out. It echoes almost in the silence that follows.
Yeah.
And that's a cool way to use that with that character.
Yeah. Don't just write off passive voice because, like I said, it allows you to control when the important pieces of information in a sentence are laid out or to skip them, depending on what you want to do. And so that's a power we get in passive voice. Whereas if we don't get that option in the active voice, right? We can't say, fired the shot. It's just an incomplete sentence. Be like, wait, who, what? But you can say the shot was fired, and that works in the passive voice, right? Yeah. So whereas here, you know, the character name is supposed to be our big reveal, and so we say by Amy, and just definitely a lot of power in knowing when to use your passive voice and how to leverage that to just give that extra edge of polish to a story.
Yeah.
Okay, so one thing that I've encountered and have a lot of discussion with other writers is if you have a long speech given by a character that can cover multiple paragraphs, then it doesn't end with a quotation mark, right? You have quotations at the beginning of that paragraph, but you don't end the paragraph with quotations because the quote is continuing. Now, the problem with this is that some readers will flag this as bad grammar, right? They'll be like, hey, you forgot to put your end quote here. Which you didn't because you're not supposed to because the quote's not done. Another reason I don't recommend doing this is because it forces you to violate one actor per paragraph because we've started a new paragraph, but it is the same character who is still speaking. Now, again, all of this is in a line with the rules of grammar, but I urge writers not to do this. So I always recommend when you're closing out a paragraph, in the quote, whether by tacking on an action beat or a tag that will cause you to close your quotation marks to avoid that confusion. And then if your next paragraph is going to be the same character speaking, I would introduce them with some kind of action beat just so that the reader knows you're staying with the same character even though you've started a new paragraph. And again, this is just for clarity. You don't want that reader to get like halfway into, two or three sentences into the next paragraph and be like, wait, is this the same guy still talking?
This is how I've solved it, but this is slightly contradicting what you just said, or it's not following the rule you just said. So I've got a couple of speeches in Star Child, and I have a big block of dialogue, and then I'll have a separate line for an action beat or even like kind of an internal response. But it's the same character because I actually don't feel like it makes sense to do an action beat for another character because it's just like it's pulling it away from what this character is up to. Now, there is an exception to that. You can describe how the audience, you know, whoever's listening to the speech, you can action beat them in between.
Yeah.
But I guess what I'm saying is I have broken the single actor per paragraph rule, and I'll do like a paragraph of speech and then a paragraph of action with that same character and then another paragraph of speech of that same character.
Well, what I'm saying is that, so when you hit that second paragraph of action, you know, you want that character's name in that first sentence so that I know, this is still that character. I'm still with that character. Right.
Yeah. So. And I just got to throw this out there. Another lesson I've learned is don't do big speeches.
Yeah. Don't do.
Just cut them down.
So, I mean, who is it? Ayn Rand is famous for these. She has speeches that go for pages and pages and pages. But she is more famous not for being a great writer, but for being a philosopher and an ideologue.
Yeah, yeah, true.
So, but yeah, so again, everything we're talking about here is about just creating clarity for the reader. We don't want the reader to get lost, because when they get lost, you lose that immersion in the story, and they enjoy it less, and there's a chance they'll put it down. That is all we've got time for today. We will, of course, be continuing our discussion on dialogue, and we'll start to get deeper into some of the more complex bones as we get deeper into some of these parts. I will mention, we did not have a release last month. We're kind of late here. So what happened was I pinched a nerve in my back and ended up spending just almost an entire month just treating that injury, and was pretty much useless. So we weren't able to release episodes. I know we were supposed to launch our Patreon, and so just everything kind of fell by the wayside, and I was just useless for a month after I hurt my back. So that's what happened there. We are still doing the show, and we are still launching our Patreon. So you'll have heard our Patreon commercials in the commercial cuts here for our show. And so, of course, you know, I mean, if you love the show for a long time, we'd love if you head over and just join at the $1 level. That's really the most we were hoping for. We're going to be rolling out some stuff at the higher tiers later on. But initially, we're just looking for, you know, to fund it, the show by volume at that $1 level, rather than trying to push a lot of people towards the higher tiers. Of course, as we roll out rewards for those tiers, if those really interest you, you know, go ahead and sign up for those. But for the most part, like I said, we're just looking to fund through volume.
I think I can speak for the listeners. I just want to say we are grateful that you are back and that you're recovering. We're excited for what's coming.
Yeah, so hopefully I'll be able to put more time in the show in the coming months, and we can get it back rolling the way it was and everything. So, thanks for listening. Of course, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review. Tell your author friends about it so you can help them. You know, I mean, I think, you know, we talked about, you know, part of the reason we started the show is we wanted to improve our own craft. But part of the reason we continue the show is I don't have enough favorite authors yet. You know, I mean, when a favorite author of mine releases a book, I'll crush it in like a week. And then I get to spend months just waiting for my next, you know, one of my favorites to release another book. There are not enough of them yet. And so we want more great authors in the world to write great works of fiction we love to read. And so definitely part of the reason there. And so that's why we encourage you to share the show, because we want as many great authors out there as possible writing great works of fiction for us to enjoy.
Amen.
So if you want us to cover a specific topic or dive deeper in, you can email us at jbendoski@gmail.com. If you want to see the show notes, look at some of the more specific examples, you can, of course, head to our website, joseph-bendoski.com/start-writing. And if you feel like it, head on over to our Patreon. I'm going to add in the address after the show, because I haven't created it yet, and I'll get on that today so that we can have an address. I'll slide in right there. Okay. And thanks for listening.
It's time to start writing.
If you've enjoyed this episode or you're enjoying the podcast in general, why don't you head on over to our Patreon? It's patreon.com/startwritingpodcast, and you know, put a dollar in our jar. You know, that's when someone does a good job and you enjoy something, we often tip those people. So yeah, just put our dollar in our jar. That's patreon.com/startwritingpodcast, and thank you.